You know, we all have a lot of data, and it has to positively, absolutely stay safe.
It can't get into the wrong hands, and the biggest challenge we have is how to transfer it from here to there. We all know as leaders that legacy tools that transfer our important files and sensitive data are mostly outdated and fall short on security, especially with the demands of today's remote workforce. Relying on outdated technology puts our organization's brand at risk, and that is unacceptable. So we are excited to invite you to step into the future of completely secured managed file transfer from our friends at Kiteworks. Kiteworks is absolutely, positively the most secure managed file platform on the market today. They've been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. And unlike traditional legacy systems with limited functionality, Kiteworks has unmatched software security with ongoing bounty programs and regular pen testing to minimize vulnerabilities. And the coolest part, they have easy to use one-click appliance updates you will love. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com to get started today. And now, the show. Lucky to work for a great group of people you really believe in.
Find yourself making an impact.
Technology is a river that flows through every aspect of an organization, and today is different. We put ourselves and our organizations literally at risk of complete destruction every single time we get online.
One click, one distraction is all it takes.
Hi, Cybercrime Junkies. This is your host, David Morrow, along with co-host Mark Mosher.
Come join us as we explore our research into these blockbuster true cybercrime stories,
along with interviews of leaders who built and protect great brands. And now the show. All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Cybercrime Junkies. I am your host, David Morrow. In the studio today, we have my illustrious and fantastic co-host, Mark Mosher. Mark, how are you this morning?
Doing wonderful, David. Thank you.
Doing okay. I got you up early today, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we are joined today from Tomislav Vuk. Tomislav, welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're excited to have you. Tomislav joins us from Croatia today, where it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we're going to talk some, we're going to talk security awareness. We're going to talk some cyber warfare. You have some incredible, kind of very unique experience. So let's let everybody get to know you. So walk us through. So did you always want to know you wanted to be in cybersecurity, or is that relatively something you developed, you know, in the last few years? Walk us through, like, kind of where you went to school and how you kind of migrated to this fantastic field.
Well, I was in a technical high school studying informatics. But back then, I didn't really have, you know, opportunity to learn much. It was like I was trying to explore, you know, what's happening, what is in the IT world, and everything alternative was, you know, was catchy for me. And I wanted to learn more about Linux. I wanted to see what's happening there, and that was my first interest, you know, in Linux and networking. How it works, what is it all about? So after that, I went to university. I studied on electrical engineering, but the sub-branch was specialization was in telecommunications and informatics. And to be honest, until I got my master's in engineering, I sort of lost interest in cybersecurity. So I did have some, you know, we never start with cybersecurity. We start, you know, what is it about hacking? So it's, right. Well, yeah, we're interested, you know.
That's kind of what I wanted to ask about. So let me step back. Let me unpack that a little. You had gone to a kind of a technical high school and you had studied informatics.
Yeah.
Right? So that's amazing because here in the States, there aren't that many high schools that have a deep dive in informatics. I mean, we,
there are schools and colleges, there are divisions within colleges that have informatics majors, et cetera, especially some of the larger universities. Some of the smaller liberal arts private colleges don't have that. But so then you went the traditional route, right? You were studying and you said that you you kind of lost interest in it until you discovered the joy of breaking stuff and then figuring out how it goes, which is how so many people get into this field, right?
Yeah, that's a common theme.
I broke a bunch of stuff and I got in the back door a bunch of places. You know, I can see how people can do some harm. I better be on the good side, right? Yep. I don't want to spend my older years in prison. So maybe I'll figure out how to help people, which is one path that a lot of people take here.
No, actually, it was about breaking stuff. You know, it was more about learning how are these things done. You know, it all sounds, you know, hacking sounds cool. You know, it's you're part of something, you know, that's not, you're young and, you know, you want to explore, but on the other hand, you are afraid. What if you get caught, you know, if you get arrested? So you don't want to try this, you know, but you want to learn. You want to know the secrets of this. And when I was in a university, I realized, you know, the technical side of, you know, electronics, of microcontrollers, of operation systems, it's not so difficult to learn. It's very logical if you're into it, you know, if you're interested.
Well, it's methodical, right? If X, then
right.
Y.
That's right.
It just gets layers of it, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. I would agree.
But I'd say that I got my real interest when I realized the human aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Or when I started learning about
humans. Social engineering.
Social engineering, social skills in general. Mm-hmm. You have various social skills in business, in love also. So your private life, everything you have to learn for your business and your private life can be applied. Because we'll always be people. You know, we'll always have our own vulnerabilities in contrast to, you know, technology. And then when I realized, you know, it's not always about technology. It's not always about, you know, being vulnerable to some malware, to having some backdoor. And I realized, well, this could be interesting. And more I got to.
Yeah, what was it when you were getting your master's degree? What was your master's at, Thomas?
Telecommunications. Well, my master thesis was a sort of calendaring standards for calendaring and things like that. It was very specific, you know.
Well, of course. Right.
But I had to learn some new stuff, how to connect various standards. So it wasn't really what I would think myself now, but back then it was, you know.
It made sense then, right?
Yeah, it made sense, you know.
So let me ask you this. Did, was there an event that you saw, read about, or experienced that kind of woke you up or created that sense of urgency to study or care about the social engineering aspect?
I wouldn't say so. I'd say that, you know, it's something that you naturally tend to. If you're interested in something. So if you like, I don't know, fishing, you'll probably know more about fishes than average people.
You know? Absolutely. Yeah, you just tend to take that deeper.
Yeah, and you'll see, you know, you see a river, you know, oh, well, there might be some good fishes. This river is not good for fishing. It's too dirty. So same thing goes for planting, yeah. And I was in a few places. When I worked in some places, you know, I would notice some small things, you know, like why are you leaving your passport exposed? Why did you pick that USB, where is it from? It was more like, you know, I was thinking about it when people didn't think about it. It was interesting to me. So that's how I got in.
That's interesting. So, well, you know, what? Let's shift gears a little bit, because I want to talk about your foray into social engineering and into leveraging and focusing on some of the platforms that are out there. There's a lot of great platforms for training people on how to recognize phishing emails,
awareness training.
How to not fall for baiting, multi-factor fatigue, all of these things that are facing a lot of us. And so many people that don't really study cybersecurity that much always say, well, we all know that. Don't train us on that anymore. We all know we don't click on links. We know. It's boring what you're saying. We know, we get it. Okay. All right. If that's the case, if that's true, why are over 80%, like, I looked for about an hour and a half the other day, and I couldn't find one stat below 80%. A couple different studies showed a bunch of different things. There wasn't one study out there that fell below 80% of the data breaches are involving that, right? That's how that initial access is brought in. So everybody may know what they're supposed to do, but nobody's doing it. Right. And so to train people and to get them to be aware, the issue is there's a lot of great, tell me what you think. Like, to me, there's a lot of great platforms, tools, methodologies, frameworks, controls out there about protecting the network. Right. We have, if you do it right, manage SIM. SIM is a phenomenal thing. It can spot the anomalies, right?
Yep.
Phenomenal. Penetration testing shows you the specific vulnerabilities so you can fix them. Okay, that's great. All that's great, but none of it will matter if we get online, we being the users, right? Working remotely, working from a coffee shop, working everywhere. People work from everywhere today. And as soon as we get online and we fall for things because it's not the princes from Nigeria offering us thousands of dollars to have our bank account. These are really good social engineering tactics. These are good, right? What I find is for an organization, let's just take a manufacturing company or critical infrastructure, a government agency, right? It seems to me they're spending a lot of their time, resources, and money on those other platforms, which are great, right? But very little is spent on the training, changing the culture of the people to raise awareness so that every single time they get online, security is top of mind. Because I'm going to get online, I am responsible for cybersecurity because I am getting online. I represent me, my family, my organization's brand. And I don't want to be the cause of bringing down something greater than me.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You know, we all have a lot of data, and it has to positively, absolutely stay safe.
It can't get into the wrong hands. And the biggest challenge we have is how to transfer it from here to there. We all know as leaders that legacy tools that transfer our important files and sensitive data are mostly outdated and fall short on security, especially with the demands of today's remote workforce. Relying on outdated technology puts our organization's brand at risk, and that is unacceptable. So we're excited to invite you to step into the future of completely secured managed file transfer from our friends at Kiteworks. Kiteworks is absolutely, positively the most secure managed file platform on the market today. They've been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. And unlike traditional legacy systems with limited functionality, Kiteworks has unmatched software security with ongoing bounty programs and regular pen testing to minimize vulnerabilities. And the coolest part, they have easy to use one-click appliance updates you will love. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com to get started today. And now the show.
Yeah. Well, I can say I've been thinking a lot about it. You know, and there are lots of. I wouldn't blame people for not knowing this. You know, because unfortunately we live in a time when people are influenced by Hollywood. And yes. they watch movies. They think that hacking is, you know, I mean, that's it.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Right.
It's not about it.
Kid in a hoodie living in his mom's basement, drinking Red Bull all night, cracking code. Right. And that is.
That's not what it is.
They are out there. That is not the norm. It's not. So.
Yeah. But also we have to understand that cybersecurity professionals are not. I mean, engineers in general, speaking, are not trained in sales. And I'm not talking about, you know, the sleazy car salesman, you know, we would imagine. As people usually also have prejudice against them, you know.
That's a great point.
We have to understand other people, you know.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly right. And so what do you see that needs improved or changed in terms of that? When you say engineers don't have the training in sales, and I think what you mean is there's a lot of different aspects to it, right? It's the application of the technical skills and technical platforms that you're training, right? And to apply it, you have to deal with people. And you have to convince people, you have to know how to make an internal business case, which I would say most technical internal IT and security teams that I know do not do a very good job at, which is part of the reason why executives and leadership don't buy into a lot of security. It's changing, but a lot of organizations, they don't, right? Because they haven't made the internal business case for it, because they're not translating between the needs, the technical needs, and the business needs, the societal needs.
I would agree, you know, but we have to say that first we have to make a difference between IT and cybersecurity.
Exactly. Which a lot of people don't know. Like a lot of people just assume, oh, it's technology, that's my IT company.
Yeah.
I've got a group, whether it's contracted or internal, whatever, doesn't matter. I've got a group that's handling my day-to-day, like I need password reset, something's broken down, something's going slow, whatever, and the security aspect of it.
Yeah.
Two totally different practices.
These are totally different areas. Then we have to understand that usually in companies, you have people who tend to be, managers or at least, you know, have this social organization, I would say, ambition or interest. And there are people who are experts. Mm-hmm. IT people are usually experts. They don't have business mindset.
Correct.
Yeah.
And they get very frustrated with the business people. I'm right in the middle.
Yes.
So I'm one of those translators in an organization. Work for a large North American MSP. My whole job every day is to translate both sides, right? Because you got the sales teams and the business development teams, the marketing operations. They don't understand the technical aspects. They're like, well, this is what the client needs. And I'm like, well, we need to articulate this and blend the subject matter expertise in there. And then on the other side, the subject matter experts don't understand how to communicate effectively, right? Both internally and externally. And so there's a development there that needs to be done. Not just in our organization. I see it across several different organizations, across several different industries.
Yeah, I would say that we lack people who do actually... Who did this, what you described, man? So who would translate from our Klingon language, so to speak, to the normal people language.
Right.
How usually said, you know, because what people, I wouldn't say that it's only about lack of information, lack of understanding. It's also lack of understanding among people who are in cybersecurity. For instance, so many times I found people talking about, you know, how to get into cybersecurity, putting 20, 30 links, free material, really good stuff. Not one about social engineering. Not one.
Yeah,
I would agree.
And
yeah. I believe,
and you said, and you said 80%
about one of my last LinkedIn posts. You're right. And I apologize. I will go and search for some social engineering.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
And so, people are usually focused on, you know, if they have some kind of cert, you know, if they are certified ethical hacker, or they usually hang on to that, you know, they hang, okay, what I learned on that, this is my value. And okay, I respect that, you know, but you have to be open to all other professionals, you know, you have to be open to all other aspects of security. And we usually say that, you know, people who will hack you, they don't have certs. They don't bother.
That's
with
exactly
the
right.
And you know, they don't care if I have a master's degree or I didn't finish the school. You know, I'm the victim, and they'll go after it. And that's a problem on our side. Problem on the general population side, so to speak. They have to be educated. I'm trying to educate people. You know, whatever happens, it can happen to you, you personally. They don't have to target you specifically by name. They just need victim. If it's not you, it will be your neighbor. It will be your son. It will be your daughter. It will be your girlfriend. Whoever. So everything can be applied. We used to have old scammers, you know, old school scammers, long before digital era. You know, snake oil scams. You know, in the old west. So we can just say that, you know, we used to have this, and now it's just online. Same principles. That's why so many breaches are about social engineering.
Yep,
I would agree. And I think some of the best. Let's talk about security awareness training approaches. Right. There, there's a lot of bad ones, and when I say bad ones, I mean they're well intended. Yeah, exactly, Mark. They're well intended. Yeah. They're just not effective because here's the thing. 100% of organizations and families, people, 100%, they're people. And we need to communicate in the way that's received, which means some people are auditory learners. Some people are visual learners. Some people are more tactile. Some people have to apply it to learn. And so when we're thinking of cybersecurity training and awareness, it needs to be something that's approached like a really comprehensive training, internship, apprenticeship, right?
Because professional development.
Yeah, exactly. We need to look to the way professional development, effective, stuff that works, right? Stuff that changes behavior, improves skills, raises the changes mentalities, and look to how they've trained people, right? 30 years ago, people wouldn't think about comments that they would make and derogatory things, right? Racist, homophobic, all those things that people would just joke about and whatever, right? Through the development and through the training that has happened through HRs, through HR teams, through laws, through lawsuits, through bad media, you see entire phenomenal careers get destroyed because of insensitivity that people do. There was a training. There's been a cultural shift toward an awareness, toward greater awareness. I'm not talking about being woke and stuff like that. I'm talking about people realize that words have power. They can really harm people. And even when the intent isn't there, right? You got to be careful what you say, what you do. It boils down to very micro acts or lack of acting that happens. And when we look to those, we see that things have to be ongoing, not just one-offs. They have to be job embedded, meaning they have to be related to the job, to what is relevant. And some of the best cybersecurity awareness trainings that I've seen, the platform, it's always a combination. There isn't one thing anybody can buy out of a box and it's going to change everything. But there's layers, right? There's a lot of integrations. And some of the best ones are the ones that really focus on why it matters in the first place. Why should they care? By starting there, it really, to me, I've seen organizations really develop and evolve along that awareness scale. How about you? I mean, what are you seeing? We are a reseller and a manager of one of the platforms, the KnowBe4 platform that does the test fit, things like that. I know you do as well. So to me, I think it's a wonderful platform. I think they've done great things. It's not the only thing that can be done. There's phenomenal open source resources that are out there. Wiser, have you seen the Wiser videos and the Wiser trainings? They use humor. They have phenomenal, and it's no cost. You can just go to their website. You can check it out. And I'm like, integrating that stuff with KnowBe4, with some live sessions, with constant reminders. I see organizations, and there's a lot of really good open source information. I think that using a little bit of all of it, making it interesting for people, is really key. What are some of the challenges you're seeing in that?
Well, the main challenge is, what we spoke about, with the think how people first they have to understand that it actually exists. You have to do this. You have to learn about it. Everyone can be a victim. Even people who teach cybersecurity awareness, they can be victims. I mean, Christopher Hamish spoke about it. He wrote Social Engineering.
He's actually on our podcast next week.
He spoke about falling for phishing. He's a great guy. And that's the book.
Yep.
That's the book. Yeah.
He's got four. His latest one is actually really good because it talks about how we can all use it in our personal lives. This is more for the practitioners. But his latest one is phenomenal, too. This is just
I've seen it. Then Roger Grimes from KnowBe4, he also spoke about, falling for phishing. It's possible for everyone. And these people are really, these people are veterans. So they can explain to people this is necessary. This is the number one step. Number two, giving people, it's a pain point. Find out this pain point. What would happen if your company sells? What would happen? How would you feel? What would happen to you if you were a decision maker? How would you feel if for 2 weeks you couldn't work if your operation stopped? It's your reputation. It's not about money. It's also about fear among employees. Nobody talks about lots of people get nervous breakdowns because of cyber attacks.
Because it's very emotional. Right. I mean,
they feel responsible. People who are not guilty, they will feel responsible. Oh, okay, did I click something? Will I get fired? Will the police come and ask me something? People are afraid. And number three.
Well, I go down as history as the person that let them in. Right.
Yeah.
You can do 15 years of great work, be very well educated, be a leader in your division. Right. And then you're going to go, your entire career is going to be known at the end, right? Long after you're gone as, that's the person that brought us down, right? Because you didn't care. You didn't pay attention, right?
Yeah.
It's also what's happening all over the place. So you just mentioned something. I want to ask your input on this. How many organizations, and we haven't done a good explanation. Let's back up a second. What do you do now, today, for a living? What organization are you with? What are you doing? Because we didn't even touch on that, and I'm sorry. So walk us through that. And then I want to ask you, kind of in doing that, what are some of the best practices that you're suggesting for people?
So, I would say I'm doing cybersecurity consultancy and cyber awareness trainings. I'm by nature, I'm an educator. I even worked in a school as a math teacher, so for some time. So I like this educational approach. You know, exploring how to approach people. As you said, not everyone responds to education the same way. Some people are auditive, some people are visual, some people are kinesthetic. They like experience things. They like stories. They like they like to imagine themselves as a protagonist, even the bad ones, But
some like humor. Some like to be able to, like, when you were able to get somebody to smile and, like, loosen up a little, right? They start paying attention more, right? Like, if we're able to, like, explain, that's part of the reason why I love those Wiser videos. It's hilarious. Like some of the things, check them out, because some of the things, and it's no cost. You can use these videos in your organization to train people. And I'm like, man, rather than that Tech Tuesday email that's dry that you blast out, right, that says, here's how to spot a fish today, right? Here's a new thing that they're doing, right? And it does that. How do we know that somebody's reading that, that's resonating with them, meaning they absorb that information, and then they take the magical step toward changing their behavior and protecting your organization's brand? First of all, 90% of everybody doesn't think it's their responsibility. They think it's up to IT, which isn't even in charge of security because it's not the security team. That's the IT team, right? That's really kind of one of the disconnects that I'm seeing all over the place.
I agree. Yeah.
The organizations that you help, are they small businesses, mid-sized businesses? What size?
From individuals to like large companies.
Whoever
comes, I would say that I usually compare, cyber awareness with the idea of cyber awareness with language learning. Many companies.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because many companies, many, I would say, professionals who got, who said, all right, we need to do something. They said, okay, can we reserve like one day and we'll have 4 hours of PPT, PowerPoint presentation, and you will say something about this and we'll say whatever. And I said, no, I don't want to do this. We'll pay. No, I don't want to do this because it's not the way it's supposed to be done.
Right.
Some people, many people do this. I don't want to. I don't see it. I don't see it as effective. I see it as a counterproductive. People will think, okay, now we're safe.
Croatian in you is coming out. An American would jump on it and be like, I don't care if it's going to be effective. I need the cash, right? So I'm very impressed. It's part of the reason why you're on this show.
But you're I would say that most Americans wouldn't do this. Most Americans would think in the long term, it's not how you do it. Let's make it 4 hours every week.
No, but because it can't just be lecturing at them. It can't be overly technical. It can't be boring, right? And that's what a lot of cybersecurity awareness trainings are. They're overly technical. It's like an engineering talking. It's almost like, you're a kid in the Charlie Brown classroom and the teacher's talking and all you hear is the womp, 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 womp. Like their eyes glaze over. You're talking a different language. So I love your analogy that it's like teaching a language.
It is because, if you're about to learn a completely new language, you have to start, you can't do this in one day. Then for the next 3 months, you don't say a word in this language. And suddenly someone comes with you get to the meeting. For instance, you were learning Hungarian and now you have a meeting with some Hungarians in 3 months. and you can't remember one word. Why? Well, you had 4 hours. You learned something. Okay, it was fun. Maybe it was really fun. I mean, you know, next day you could repeat some song or something. But in 3 months, you'll know nothing. I mean, I was trying to learn Hungarian. It's not an easy language.
No.
So, the same analogy is here, you know, and mm-hmm. sometimes people even complain, you know, but it's repetitive. You know, after 3 months, we are still talking about fishing. Well, what's your prone to fishing? You know, how many people are prone to it? 30%. All right. Then you didn't learn. You have to do it, you know. This is why you have to do it. You just don't drop out. When you learn language, you repeat the same things all over again. Some methods are more suited for auditive people, like Michel Thomas, for instance, which are like also, I'm not auditive, I'm more kinesthetic. I like, you know, examples. I like real life experience, you know.
Right.
The best way to learn language is if you speak it, you know, if you
find plunk people you down. Yeah, the best way to learn is to plunk you down in a community where you need to buy a soda at the store and you need to communicate how much and do the transaction, and all those little micro steps that you take develop that comfort level and that instinct.
Unfortunately, in cybersecurity, we are not allowed to, you know, to learn from mistakes.
Right.
Really, really costly. Yeah.
Absolutely true. Let me ask you this. So you touched on something that I found was interesting, and that is, so you're in Croatia. We're over here in the Midwest in the United States. How are things different there in terms of what you're looking at? And I know that Americans are very, very proud of my country. But we have a long way to go. Like, we're very geocentric, right? We know about our states and our cities and everything else. We don't know a lot about the other parts of the world, right? The other parts of the world know about Kentucky, where Mark is, right? Mark doesn't know his way around Croatia at all. I bet he can't list like 3 cities there, right?
No. Nope.
And that's okay, but that's our own geocentricity. We got to work on that. How are things different there in terms of the approach to cybersecurity or in light of cyber warfare? Because I have a sense that it is a little different.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I mean, I know that Tallahassee is the capital of Florida, or that Albany is capital of New York.
I bet Mark didn't even know that.
I honestly did not know that.
It's been a long time.
I'm over here taking notes. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it's been a long time since he's been in eighth grade.
And I think that Spokane is the capital of Washington.
Yeah.
That is really good, Thomas Lobb. That is really good.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know anything about Croatia. We don't. And that's well, our, so we need to we need to develop it. But I think that things are different over, like, in Europe, Eastern Bloc areas, there's so many different countries so close together. Right. Yeah. I mean, we go, you know, where Mark lives, trust me, it's a different world than where I live. Right. And it's about 2 hours for me, but it's not a different country. You know what I mean? It's a different cultural, you know what I mean? It's just a tweak on it, but it's still the same country. We can come and go. There's no adversarial governments and things, but within that same distance over there, you have different countries, different relationships with NATO, different relationships with Russia, with Ukraine, all that just within a couple of hours. So it's fundamentally different. So what are you guys seeing? Are people more aware of the dangers to critical infrastructure that cybersecurity brings, things like that?
Yeah. I would say that people generally, you know, in this region, southern Eastern Europe, it's the Balkans and the wider region from the Alps and the Danube River, if we talk about the relationship with between people, you know, there's a lot of good and bad historical things going on. So, with that comes, you know, lots of mistrust. I would say that people are aware. We are talking about it. I think 3 weeks ago, I was at the conference when people spoke about, you know, the cybersecurity of the critical infrastructure, and we are all aware that we're trying to reflect, you know, the relationship small countries have with big players.
Yeah,
and it was quite surprising to see, you know, Hungarians being, for instance, pro-Russian, as historically they weren't so pro-Russian. Serbia is.
When you say that, do you mean in light of the Ukraine-Russian?
Yeah, in light of the Ukraine-Russian conflict. Yeah, and Serbia is historically also more pro-Russian. Bulgaria also, but in a if we talk about, you know, the economic relationship, the some also historical relationship, despite Croatia being part of NATO, despite being part of the European Union, we used to have a very good relationship with Russia. So despite of they being very, very close with Serbia, we also had good relationship with Russia and Ukraine. So I would say it's a mess, you know, everyone is for themselves, but also together. Lots of nations speak the same, similar language. There are also, you know, cases where, I mean, yesterday Erdogan, he's a Turkish president. He was threatening Greece or Aegean Islands. You know, it's both countries are in NATO. You know.
Yes. Yeah. Well, where I went to college, I had a lot of international students in my college. It was a private liberal arts, and we had people from, like, one of my college roommates was from Athens, Greece. Another one was from Germany. So we had all these people, and that's part of the reason why I knew all about the World Cup, like back in the 80s and 90s, when before anybody in the United States learned about the World Cup, because all my friends were all from Europe and other parts of the world. So the Turks and the Greeks have always, they've always been threatening each other, right?
Yeah, like it's very historical. You know, the Greeks have a long history from the ancient times, you know, and Byzantine Empire, Turks conquered them, so on. And we also have a long history with Turks, you know, 400 years of wars with them.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, but if we talk about, you know, cybersecurity, I'd say that it's a bit complicated. I wouldn't say that we are trying to rely on our bigger partners. So if something happens, we are trying to rely on the United States because we are part of NATO. It's not just because we want it, because or we are not capable. It's just because it's part of NATO and we are part of geopolitical interest of the West. That's how it is.
Yeah, and I think that it's all part of, like, you guys have a local insight and local awareness right there in the heart of it, right? And aligning with a greater power that may have more resources, that collaboration helps. You know,
it's all about resources.
Yep.
So
we have many good experts, you know, but I wouldn't say that in the terms of security, cyber warfare, it's a lot of dependability just because of the resources.
Well, in part of it, does the Croatian government have a, like, cyber warfare or cybersecurity arm?
Yeah, it's part of the intelligence.
Okay, I assume that they did. I was just curious, because as the more and more I learn about the different countries and what they're doing, so many of them are really funding that and building that up. I'm always shocked how how little the United States does with that. Like, you would think we had 300,000 cyber warfare engineers monitoring these huge monitors all day long, protecting things. And it's, you know, hate to tell you folks, that's not the way it is. And there's a big need for collaboration between the private sector and public sector, volunteers, things like that. One thing that I wanted to ask you about is, you know, the ransomware groups, some of these cyber gangs that are out there, they tend to be from certain regions. Overall, like, there are exceptions. There are groups everywhere. There's groups right here in the Midwest. I know that. But I'm talking about the larger groups, the R-Evils, the Contis, the Lockbits, that are these ransomware as a service phenomenons. You know what I mean? Where they have,
yeah, I know,
too, like, where they're recruiting openly. You can go to the forums on the dark web and they're like, want you to join. They're advertising. They're like, the next generation ransomware, we're the guys. And they have, like, you know, tattoo contests for affiliates that Mark wanted to
join. Which I almost entered, yes.
I'm like, don't get your tattoos in the United States. You're not getting an R-Evil or a Lockbit tattoo. You're not doing that. He wouldn't know what to do. But the thing is that my question to you is this. What's the role in studying those personality traits and studying those groups? Because what I'm seeing is a lot of them do a lot of PR. A lot of them will speak with the media. A lot of them are surprisingly accessible. And these are the guys that are the black hat causes of a lot of emotional damage out in the world. And when Conti, right? Conti was super effective, very technical, like high technical prowess, you know, aligned, I think, either in the Ukraine or mostly in the Russian area. That's where researchers tend to believe. But after the Ukraine-Russia war started, they came out kind of in favor of Russia, and there was a big backlash there. And Conti basically, the name or the group kind of started to go away, right? Their infrastructure got pulled offline, things like that. But now you start to see these groups that are saying, we're non-political. We're just here for the cash. How are you guys addressing that? What are you saying? Are you seeing some of the same thing in your research?
Well, I wouldn't say that these people right before the war, you remember that Russia arrested members, arrested members of
very big spectacle. They did it in true Russian format where they all on, they break down the doors. They throw their videos of the cash, and it's like an old movie from the 70s. You're like, I'm watching.
Same thing happened in Barcelona. Same thing happened in Barcelona when Spanish police got another crime gang. Same thing happened in Ukraine before the war. Lots of gangs were arrested. My suspicion is that these groups were already known, the intelligence there. But these groups weren't cooperating.
Either sponsored, right? Sponsored, or it seems like they look the other way, right? So long as you're not, you know, the Russian government will say to the ransomware gangs, so long as you don't touch one of our organizations, right? Don't touch a Russian organization, then we'll leave you alone. But then they still kind of turned on our evil, right? Why do you think that happened?
Maybe they see, or I would say that maybe they see parts of our evil as a group that is non-cooperative.
Mm.
And they just, you know, they didn't, they said, okay, these guys won't cooperate, we'll get rid of it. But in general, I like to compare this to, you know, the age of sail. During the age of sail, you had privateers. These were the pirates who were attacking the countries that were enemy to certain crown. For instance, French privateers would attack British, Spanish ships, Dutch, or whatever. Dutch privateers wouldn't attack Dutch ships. They were loyal to Dutch. The whole purpose of that was, you know, they were gaining money, they were gaining wealth, but they were also damaging the economy of the rivals of the native countries. I would say that the same principle is safe. It's asymmetrical warfare. They are targeting economy whenever it's not possible to target, you know, to make a sophisticated cber attack like Stuxnet was. You know, they will attack small companies, thousands of small companies. Usually in Europe, for instance, small and medium companies are a backbone of the economy. So if you make a mess in this area of economy, if you attack, if you put panic, if you take money, you know, it's a big damage for a country. You want to attack. And one company, okay, but thousands of them, it's really critical.
Yeah.
And I'd say that in smaller countries are not so interesting, you know, to the big players. We are interesting in some other way, you know. Okay, Albania was recently. I wanted to say, you know, in late August, September, and early October. Montenegro was attacked, Albania was attacked, Serbia was attacked, energy infrastructure.
Who was driving these attacks? Who was doing groups.
Italy was also attacked, Bosnia and Herzegovina. These are five countries, except Albania, four countries that border Croatia. And we were like,
wow,
what's happening? You know, Albania was attacked by supposedly Iranian group.
Mm.
And several occasions. I even seen some documents that got leaked, you know, and some opposition groups, you know, was spreading it. I didn't read them because I don't speak Albanian.
Right.
Montenegro was attacked, FBI got involved. Serbia was attacked, the whole intelligence got involved.
And these are countries are not governments that got attacked, you're talking about, right?
Yeah, governments.
Government critical infrastructure, things like that.
Yeah. And this is all for, you know, causing to cause some political instability. So if you cause a political instability, you can maybe change the government. You can maybe change the idea how people think.
It undercuts the very fabric of the government in place.
Not one attack. You can make a cyber attack. You can make a diplomatic pressure. You can make some sanctions. Mm-hmm. And when you put it all together, you know, it can make a difference, big difference. So that's how I see this evolution of cyber warfare. You know, I see it not only as a you know, John DiMaggio said about Anthem attack, you know, it was like 5 years ago.
I was going to bring it up, right? The Anthem attack, right? This is what we talked about with John DiMaggio, the author of that book, The Art of Cyber Warfare, right? And he talks about when, on the face of it, it looks like Anthem was breached for the data, but it wasn't, right? By doing further, by looking further into it, they found that it was a breach, so that because Anthem was one of the larger providers of health insurance and claims, et cetera, for U.S. government officials, including some in the Secret Service and FBI, et cetera, that by breaching that, they were able to tell who was part of that organization.
Yep.
Which is not something you can discover through OSINT. Right, through the open source searching,
and that's practically a supply chain attack.
Yes.
So
that's good stuff.
Yeah. And this is what people have to be aware of. You know, everything is practically online. I mean, we have a situation that even if it didn't happen that way, even if Anthem wasn't related anyhow with the military or intelligence personnel, they paid $115 million, I think, in fines.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge damage on their reputation. So it's a
huge
blow on the economy.
Yeah.
Yep.
So before we go,
Tomislav, as we wrap up, I wanted to ask you about the resources that people use and the approaches that people use to research organizations, people. First, let me ask you, what are some of the best resources you use to stay aware of what's going on in cybersecurity and cyber warfare today?
Oh, good question.
Do you look at, and that's something, Mark, you know what, we need to start asking all of our guests that.
Yeah.
Because we need to, and to share with the listeners, where are we all getting our information? I use this thing called Feedly, which feeds in all of the different RSS feeds. So everything pertaining to cybersecurity, the moment it breaks, I get notified and I'm able to see it, right? It's part of the reason why we get to talk about stuff before it's in the main media. Yeah. But there's a lot of different things like that. What are you looking to? I know Krebs on security, the Hacker News, things like that. Well, what things do you find a lot of value in?
My network.
What is that?
My network. So on LinkedIn, I connected with really resourceful people.
Yep. Like
Alexander Blom. I just want to name, Harold Walker. And people like that, you know, they put something. And then I read the article. I'd say that I have a habit. I developed a habit of reading these news, these articles.
Yep.
Not every day, but most of the time. Then I listen to some podcasts. Then I, you know, it's not that I do this every day, but, you know, if something interesting happens and if I see that it's a critical infrastructure, if there's some kind of, you know, if I get the hunch that something bigger is happening, mm-hmm. I try to research. I try to read between the lines, you know. I was always interested in geopolitics, mm-hmm. not so much in politics. Whenever I talk about this, you know, I'm not trying to pick sides. You know, I'm trying to pick the facts. It's more interesting to me. I don't want to pick sides because it's, you know, I can be wrong. You know, I could pick the wrong side. But when I read about this, you know, I try to see, okay, what's happening? How is it possible? For instance, when Killnet hacked Lockheed Martin in July, early August, they said, you know, we are going to hack Lockheed Martin. Lockheed Martin said, no, not a chance. We have a top security. And I said, well, this means that they already got in. And they already have the data, you know, and they already made an analysis of that. It's not just taking nothing. You have to know what they took, you know. And so I went on Telegram. I found the Killnet group. It was in Russian. Mm-hmm. And I really found the documents. I mean, it was publicly announced. It was not something, you know, I got to see in some illegal way. I really found the documents with a list of all the people working for Lockheed Martin. They put it online. You know, and they said, okay, we managed to do this. So that's how, you know, if you're curious, you'll find it. You know, you can find it on Telegram groups. To find it on, but I'm mostly in most cases I talk with people in my network, because we say that you have a saying that two heads are thinking better than one head. So
absolutely. I always believe that we're a lot smarter collectively than any one of us individually.
Yep.
Yeah. And if we are stupid collectively, we'll be more stupid.
Yeah, and we all have a wall of group of idiots. So,
That's exactly right. Well, hey, Tomislav Vuk, thank you so much, sir. This will not be the last.
Yes, time thank you very much.
We thank will you. Connect thank with you. You. We will have Tomislav's link to LinkedIn in the show notes. Please connect with him. Really great resource. You've got great insight. I love the content that you produce, some of the insight and questions that you ask. You've got to.
I have to write in English more. So.
That's okay. Translation. So I see your post. Right. And I click the translation. It's like 90% accurate. So it's good. Yeah. So, well, thank you so much, sir. We really appreciate it. And we will talk soon. Thanks, everybody. Yep.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Cybercrime Junkies, thanks for listening and watching. Got a question you want us to address on an episode? Reach out to us at cybercrimejunkies.com.
If you enjoy our content,
then please consider subscribing to our YouTube channel at Cybercrime Junkies.
Connect with us on all social media like LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. And check out our website at cybercrimejunkies.com. That's cybercrimejunkies.com.
And thanks for being a cybercrime junkie.